logged in already. In other words, even though he comes in by Echo Link, you would see him as logged in if he was there. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
Yeah, if you go to Echo Link and put it in yourself in your own computer, I think I have a Linux version. You can see who's logged into the node that goes into the repeater. So he's not there.
Understand. So I think the $600 is being given to people on Social Security, and that's quite as good as the $1,000. But is an American product American, and is a foreign product foreign? In the case of some major purchase like an automobile, not so clear. K2KUY, K2LAW.
No. Foreign.
What would you do if you were president?
Coming.
That's a tough one.
They took a poll, and the vast majority of people said that when they get this so-called gift, the $600 gift, they are not going to spend it. They're going to keep it for a rainy day, which right now many people are afraid that things are going to get much worse before they get better. And the vast majority of people said no, they're not interested in really making any plans to spend that money. However, with the coupon idea I had, this coupon in 3 months will expire. And this $1,000 has to be spent or you will lose it. If you only spend $700 of it for, like again, clothing, household goods, appliances, whatever, the rest of the money is just the coupon will expire. In other words, you've got to spend the money. Putting it away, and this is what happened in Japan. In fact, that was the best example of all. The people there, they created a recession there because people just didn't want to spend. They are very thrifty people, and they just were holding on to their money. So it started to cause a backflow. It hit them, actually. It became, yes, because the complaint is in this country that we don't save enough for the rainy day. They went overboard and saved too much for the rainy day. So there's the result. But now you take, for instance, if you want to keep these companies, like I say, like General Motors, Chrysler going, just handing them money, Dick, is how is this supposed to, you know, better their company other than just keep them afloat? This is the point. You got to find out how you gonna, if you want to keep that name, GM, in this country. I know the car. Let me let it drop. No, it's not the, you know, holy name in this country, all the parts and all. But you said about, like, Toyota and all. Yes, it's assembled in this country. But that the company's profits, the profits for it are going back to, I guess, Japan, where at least the profits from General Motors is going to their employees, which are spending it for, well, for the subsistence. I mean, you know, whatever they have, mortgages and college education, food, clothing, you know, everything is being spent in this country for the salaries that they're getting paid. So if you want to keep these companies afloat, maybe we should try this system. Anybody's had a car registered in their name for 10 years or more, give them, I don't know, $5,000 to $6,000 equivalent money in this country to what they're doing in Europe, and towards the purchase of one of these new cars, a made in American or American company, I should say, Dick, over.
Hey, you and I are worried about whether or not the economy is recovering. And on 60 Minutes tonight, Bernanke was being interviewed, and he does see significant evidence that the economy is beginning to mend. We're not out of the woods yet, but there appears to be some light at the end of the tunnel. The tremendous numbers of billions of dollars, as you said, given to the banks, and they're not lending it. To my knowledge, Eric, I mean, Mel, those are loans. That money was loaned to them, and some of those banks want to give back the loan now. That money was being loaned to them to stimulate the economy. I think the money given to AGI and General Motors and Chrysler and the banks, I think these are loans. I don't think these are permanent gifts. Do I have that backwards? K2KUY, K2RAW?
have it right. They are, we actually are, the American public right now has actually got a stake in all these different banks and the companies that we bailed out. So they'd like to own it. They'd like to own it back again. I mean, buy it back by returning the loan. But in the meantime, you know, they're holding the money, and the idea is a bank is in business to people to come in and borrow money for mortgages or purchase cars, whatever, you know, and you can't get a loan. So, yeah, they can give back the money, but that's not going to, you know, improve the economy. And if he says the economy is improving, how come last month was the worst of the layoffs, the most filing for unemployment insurance was, I think, either, yeah, I think it was May, Dick, over.
I believe we're at an all-time high for unemployment. We may be at an all-time high. No, we're not at an all-time high for the rate at which we're filing bankruptcy, individuals filing bankruptcy. So the rate at which the unemployment is increasing is slowing down. It's going to be a long time before all those people are employed again. And some of them may have to change careers. I know that's not easy, but that's part of what we got to do to adapt. With hindsight, a little bit of this, in theory, could have been anticipated, and we could have started the corrective action sooner. I think everybody didn't want to believe that the subprime mortgage jazz was anywhere near as bad as it was. Everyone said, I'm afraid to look. And now that we're starting to look, I think it's reasonably bad. And how in the world we allowed a system that had so few checks and balances that mortgage brokers were establishing mortgages to people that really didn't qualify. They collected their percentage and ran away. And they were allowed to do it, and they were lying. And so we had much too little regulation. And that had to be changed.
So who's at fault?
Say it again?
So who's at fault?
There's enough blame to go around. Who do you think's at fault?
I turn this into a political discussion, but I don't want to do it.
Okay. Some people think it began with Reagan. Reagan said we got too much regulation. And his removal of all the regulation, particularly on banking, is one of the causative agents that got us into that subprime mortgage jazz where
we're just the beginning.
Oh, yeah. But there's a beginning somewhere.
Yeah, most people don't realize that during Eisenhower's term, if you made over $250,000, you paid 91% income tax.
And in those days, that was an awful lot of money. I think that's the equivalent of $1.5 million a year today, isn't it? Something like that?
It's up to...
Yeah, when you were away later, I was asking you a question about Frontline and Nova and places like that. The educational programming and the programming that PBS has had on the subject of global economy. I was sort of asking you the question that when PBS reviewed the current status of global economy, could one, reviewing all of those news-like programs, come to the conclusion that globalization and outsourcing to some degree is here to stay, that we can't go back anymore? We're going to have to learn to accept that. Is that one possible conclusion that a person could have by looking at those particular news-like documentary programs? That's a question to you, Eric. K2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Don't forget that shows like Frontline and Nova, they're not all produced by the same people, actually. I mean, PBS and their endowments, actually WGBH and their endowments provide their funding for Nova and Frontline, where WNET is jointly doing stuff with like the News Hours, the co-production of WNET and WETA in Washington. So these companies, or these offices are pretty much an outsourcing operation of themselves, where they hire other production companies to put these shows together. That's one thing. But the reality is that, like the outsourcing that goes on in India, their wages are beginning to go up. The country is beginning to say, I want more. So what you could get for one-tenth the price of an American worker will at some point in time become equal. And that kind of outsourcing will not be worthwhile anymore.
We've got a whole lot of people out of work. After the depression of 1929, the Work Projects Administration put those people to work building roads, interstate highway system. Boy, that was good. Things like the Tennessee Valley Authority that generated a whole lot of locally generated local power. Renewable energy resource. Right now, I don't know how we're tolerating 60% of that very vital oil that we need is being imported. I'd love to get off of that oil import sensitivity, because all we need is for somebody to decrease that by a couple of percent and all of us sit on gas lines. And that happened in the early 70s. I'd rather not live through that again. So the people that are out of work, is there a way that we can have them start manufacturing solar voltaics, windmills, tides, North American gyre, what do you call it now? The Gulf Stream, there's tremendous amounts of power that can be sucked out of the Gulf Stream. So why not a brand new kind of Work Projects Administration? Why not put those people to work? Because if we wait until 100,000 jobs, I'm going to pick a number out of the air. I'm going to assume that 100,000 automobile workers are either out of work or soon to be out of work. And you can sit here and say that, okay, the economy is going to recover and 100,000 automobile manufacturing workers are going to be back at their job. That may be way overly optimistic. They're going to have to find another job. And should the other job be renewable energy resources, fixing the infrastructure? We got bridges that are on the threshold of creating failures. We got roads that need repair. We got the renewable energy resources that should be developed, manufactured, and installed. Do all of that and you become less petroleum dependent, more independent, and that's an American product. Is there anything wrong with pushing that philosophy? Is that what Obama is about to do during his campaign? Didn't he say things in that direction? Anybody got any opinions? Give me your call, it's K2LIW.
Oh, K2J.
Go right ahead, Eric.
Oh, I've got a lot to say about Thursday. First of all, in terms of photovoltaics, we are one of the lost leaders of not manufacturing photovoltaics to the extent that, say, Germany does, or Japan does, or a few other places. So, could you imagine if we took all the auto workers and the closed factories, which have all this wonderful gear, and they started making wind turbines? You know that the largest manufacturer of wind turbines is over in Denmark? Germany is actually one of the larger manufacturers of photovoltaics to the extent that they've actually been able to get the cost down for themselves. And unfortunately, you know, we didn't elect an entire Congress that has the ears of intelligent people. And unfortunately, Mr. Obama cannot exist doing the kinds of things that he wants to do without having some compromise, and some bad compromise as far as I'm concerned. So some of the stuff that he talks about will probably happen, and a lot of it probably won't, because it takes money to do the stuff. So that's one problem. The other thing is to take Mr. Obama on his word about clean coal. Well, let's be realistic. There is no such thing as clean coal ever. You just want to dump the carbon dioxide into the ground. That's pretty dumb. What if it leaks? But, you know, it's things like that. You can see the influence of a lobbyist and industry is having on him now that his campaign is over. You know, you've got to be somewhat realistic about this in terms of what really is going on. So, you know, Jury's out as to where we're going. I mean, things are headed in the right direction. There's no question about it. This country could be learning to drop. This country could be the world's leaders in alternative energy choices. We were even bad at making batteries. We don't make batteries. The Japanese do a better job of that. In terms of mass energy projects, consider the amount of energy you get out of the wind. I mean, if you're in the Midwest, where the wind blows all the time, like in Colorado and those parts of the mountains there, which is a wonderful place to put this stuff, where there's an awful lot of resistance to doing that, or in terms of ocean currents, the size of the generators that you need to extract that energy makes them expensive. So it can all be done. A smart grid can be put together. Some new technologies can be developed, because that's one thing this country is good at, is discovering new technologies inside universities. As far as, like, implementing it and doing something with it, we're really bad. K2RIW, K3J. K2RIW. Go ahead, Bernie.
Two comments, and I think I was trying to get in earlier. I apologize. The battery on my rig at the office died, so I wasn't getting out. But two comments I wanted to make. Number one is that the decision of buying American or buying offshore is only a conscious decision by a few people who can afford to make that decision. The majority of Americans can't afford to make that decision. The reason that they buy Japanese cars is they perceive that it's less expensive over time to drive them. The reason that they clothe their kids in clothes made in sweatshops in the Pacific Rim is because it's cheaper. They can afford to buy their kids more clothes, or they can afford to buy their kids clothes, basically. If suddenly milk came from China that was half the cost of American makers, guess what? The majority of Americans are going to feed their kids Chinese milk because they can't afford to. Second comment out, let me drop. The second comment is that we really cannot expect the government to give us anything from a standpoint of incentive. If they gave us $1,000 that Brian requires to go spend it, who do you think the $1,000 is coming from? They're just taking it out of my tax bill and giving it back to me. If the government wants me to go spend money, they need to cut my taxes. They need to make my life easier. We live in Long Island here, which is one of the highest tax bases anywhere. And if they want us to go out and create and start doing these things, they've got to give us some incentive to do it. Where right now, the whole concept is they're taking our money and giving it back to us, and that doesn't create wealth. Anyway, just my opinion. K2IO.
Are the property taxes high in Garden City yet, Bernie? I know the answer to that is yes. Is a typical house in Garden City taxed at approximately $10,000 a year? That's a pure guess on my part. Over to you, Bernie.
You only miss by 50%. I live in a modest-sized house. But my house is smaller than 2,000 square feet. It's a reasonable-sized house. I pay $15,000 a year in property taxes. I paid approximately 3% of the purchase price of my house. My house in California, I would pay a third of that in taxes. And people complain about taxes are too high in California. The people that complain about taxes too high in California have never lived in New York.
I can remember, I'll admit this was a decade ago, but a relative of mine lived in Rosebud, Arkansas. That particular relative was unhappy that his taxes that year were raised from $16 to $37 per year. I just can't relate to that. And that was farmland that he's living on. So, yeah. How in the world have you and I, Bernie, people who think they're a little bit smart, decided to live in the place where the electricity is about as expensive as it is anywhere in the United States, the taxes are about as high as anywhere in the United States, just so that we can live on an island and have water around us and it's easy to go to a beach and there's local technology we can work at? How in the world did we choose this place to live when it's that expensive? Oh well. Even if we buy, getting back to what Eric said, even if we buy that windmill in Holland and we buy that photovoltaic from Germany, still going to be a fair amount of occupation of installing it on all of those locations in the United States. There's a lot of work to fix bridges and roads and dams and whatever. Infrastructure, there's a lot of infrastructure. The power grid needs repair. There's a lot of repairs and updating, which is purely a local service as I see it. That's not very much going to be outsourced unless you want to ship in a whole lot of people to do the labor. I don't think we do. So, I see a lot of corrective action that could be done. Right now, maybe I'm naive. I don't know of any great disadvantage that happened from the Work Projects Administration, which I guess was partially done by FDR, right after the Big Depression. We got an interstate highway system. We got quite a few bridges and dams and whatever. It seemed like we got a lot of good things and not too many bad things. But am I being overly naive on that? And if not, if that really was 90% good and 10% bad, could we do it again? Should we do it again? And maybe now's the time. Have you got an opinion on that? K2RIW in the second half.
KC2QIQ.
Glenn recognized. Anyone else?
K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Anyone else? You got it, Glenn.
Yeah, I think you're going to find that that really didn't work too well back in the first time. The second time, right now, we've got a bigger problem. And the problem is this. What's really causing this whole issue is that we're trying to compete with countries that have populations of 1.6 billion people. You have in Asia, and their salaries are much lower. And what's basically happening naturally is, of course, salaries are going to be coming down in proportion. Standard of living is going to be affected by it. So the natural effect would be prices should be coming down. You should see deflation in this type of an economy. Unfortunately, what's happening is government and local localities are paying salaries under contracts, under laws that are written, so that they have to maintain these deficits and these bills that have to be paid. So it's fighting the deflation from happening naturally. So, okay, you'll make less, but everything costs less. The banks almost start to fail because of that, so they had to throw a whole bunch of money at it. Now, the problem is if you keep on spending more money, it just increases the costs more and makes things expensive while you're making less. That's the kind of the problem. Somehow, eventually, it has to reach an equilibrium where eventually their cost of living will come up, ours will go down, and the pricing becomes like some kind of a world constant. Now, where's that going to bottom out and settle? I don't think anybody really has an answer to that one yet. And it's pretty scary even just to think about. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
In theory, though, Glenn, you and I are adaptive enough that we can roll with the punches. You and I find it fairly easy, Mel, you and I, and Eric, find it fairly easy to educate ourselves in a new field if we felt we had to. And lucky for us, our particular field is sufficiently in demand, and we're living in the right part of the country where we don't have to. If all four of us were living in Detroit right now, and we used to work for General Motors, designing fancy electronics that went into their automobiles and designing fancy techniques for manufacturing them. And if you really fell in love with your house in Detroit and didn't want to leave Detroit, boy, that's a tough one. Even if we chose this renewable energy resource idea that I was pushing there a little bit, is there enough of that kind of work in Detroit? Maybe not. Mel was telling us earlier that although Japan for a while was manufacturing things much cheaper, the Japanese economy is rapidly increasing, and those people want to have salaries that are similar to ours. And wherever things are being manufactured right now very cheaply, those people are going to improve, and they're going to demand the higher salaries. It's going to settle out, unfortunately, much too slow to keep everybody here happy. K2KEY, K2RIW.
KC2MIQ.
MIQ recognized. We're going to get you right after Mel. You got it, Mel.
Hey, XYL has just pointed out to me that she read a book written by a gentleman by the name of Galbraith. Galbraith, is it another woman? Yeah, Galbraith. And It was a whole discussion, basically, about what actually transpired during FDR, during the Great Depression, and methods that were used supposedly to try to alleviate the terrible condition the country was in. And it came down that finally that whatever he tried, he had the WPA, like you say, and all these other projects, and basically it was not successful. The only way that the Depression, they said, ended was because World War II came along. Day before Pearl Harbor, the country actually still was in a depression that was still held over from 1929. And the day after Pearl Harbor, the depression ended, Dick. That's the bottom line. So all that projects and ideas of the times, equivalent to what you're thinking about today, didn't seem to have the success that at first they all thought it was going to achieve, Dick, over.
Okay, I think you're telling me it wasn't a glamour fix immediately, but we did get a interstate highway system out of it. That's given us very long-term commercial benefit as well as social benefit. Much easier to drive long distances to go on vacation, much easier to send goods and services by truck much longer distances. I guess there are some people who will say that, gee, because we created an interstate highway system, we didn't emphasize rail, and rail, had we emphasized it, would have been cheaper. Maybe we could have done both. Maybe we can improve our rail system as well as our power grid system. Charlie's going to tell us what to do to make it better. KC2MIQ, you got it, Charlie. K2RIW. What are the people in Riverhead saying?
KC2FIQ. I'll tell you what, if I do come up with an answer, you can start sending the money right now. I'll be waiting at the door. The original comment I was going to make is that the world has become lazy. And to convert the power structure throughout the world to a sensible putting your shoulder to the wheel type situation is going to be extremely difficult, because people don't want to do or make windmills or whatever. I had a nice job sitting at a plush desk, and I just decided that I want it the way it was, and we can't have it the way it was. The power structure in the world, and that's financial, doesn't want us to, want us to succeed. They want us in debt, and they want us subservient. Because look around the world at all these fanatical type regimes. They're all have the same thing. Keep the people under them down. Let me drop it. So that we have not only an educational we're going to have to starve to death before we wake up to the fact that we can't have it like it was. This is KC2MIQ Clear.
Okay, Charlie. As bad as things are right now, and we are going through a fairly nasty depression, obvious by the fact that this is the first time in history that people doing long-term investing in the stock market for a decade did not make a profit. essentially every other part of history for the last roughly 150 years, if you were a long-term investor with reasonable diversification in the market, you were guaranteed something like 7 or 8% profit over a 10-year period. And this last 10-year period, 1999 to 2009, you did not make a profit. It's the first time. From that point of view, it looks pretty bad. And if I was living in Detroit and living in certain portions of Pennsylvania and certain portions of Kentucky, where an awful lot of local industry is now really hurting, it looks pretty bad. However, take those people in the worst place you can find in the United States and ask them where else on planet Earth do they want to live. They're going to be very hard-pressed to find a better place. Let me drop. There's a hell of a lot of places in this world where you and I wouldn't like the economy, we wouldn't like the people, we wouldn't like the concepts, we wouldn't like the religion, we wouldn't like the politics. There are very, very few places on planet Earth where the lifestyle is as good as we've got it. It's easy for us to say it's terrible. Boy, I hate it. And we're going to the dogs. For the vast majority of the people in this country, I think there is no better place to live. We're going to have to bloom where we're planted. We're going to have to put our shoulders to the wheel. We're going to have to adapt. We're going to have to re-educate. I know these things hurt. I know these things will make... If you talk to a person who's unemployed in Detroit right now and you say any of those words, he would like to suck you in the nose. I understand that. But you've got to be a little bit more global in that way of thinking. It's bad, but there ain't no better place. Better fix this one. That's an opinion. You guys probably got other opinions. Give me your call letters, K2LIW.
K2KEY.
Okay, Mel. What else did you gather from that mailbag that we're in trouble? That you and I ain't doing it right as far as the way we run this thing.
Yeah, and I got plenty of people are very unhappy with a number of different things that we are doing, but then I'm actually going to quote you that the price is right. And so we're not, maybe not the gospel, but it's the best, we do the best, and I don't think anybody else can do much better. Yeah, but the bottom line is, you know, I guess the old saying, which was popularized some years ago, when your neighbor's out of work, it's a recession. When you're out of work, it's a depression. And this is the consensus that people see, that what we grew up, and I know I had my, let me put it this way, I grew up like you, we grew up in the 40s, and even things did improve tremendously. My parents did live through, like your parents, through the depression. And in fact, my mother, may she rest in peace, she never really got out. She always, that's all she ever talked about, because she had such bad times she went through. And she used to tell me about it constantly, trying to get me saved, Mel, because you see, let me tell you what a penny was, and on and on and on. But the bottom line was that even with that, I saw the recessionary period of the 50s and how hard it hit me personally, that I could not afford a small tuition to go on after graduating Brooklyn Tech, going on to college without finding myself a job and working and going back and forth part-time and spreading this education, secondary education, over a long period of time, Dick. So I know what we basically are facing again. Over.
KQL.
Go ahead, Bernie.
A comment and also
so I apologize. There's an airplane flying over at the moment. A comment and a question. First, my comment is to you, specifically Mel, but to Dick also, that I, for one, am very appreciative of the TechNet, and that I hope, Mel, that you understand that for every email you got complaining, that we could send you a dozen emails that are saying, keep doing what you're doing. My question is, what is the TechNet email address? I keep hearing about the emails, but I have no idea where to send them.
I'm going to let Mel answer that one. And he is a devil for punishment. He's the guy that people are emailing to because I'm telling people, in general, I cannot answer emails. I'm willing to get on the air and live with voice, and I get excited 150 words a minute and get verbose, but still, I'll answer questions. But I am not volunteering to supply a free written consulting service. That's not what's being offered. And Mel is not offering that either. He takes a certain number of people that he thinks are getting into ham radio and answers their emails and helps them out. So, Mel, what's the best way to answer Bernie's question as to where's the address to price to K2KEY, K2LAW?
As you said, this is K2KEY. Most of the emails that I do answer from new hams that have a particular problem, you know, that is basically something that I know I sympathize with them because I had similar problems starting out in ham radio at 13 years old, and sometimes I didn't get exactly a good answer from so-called Elmers or older hams that were around. I think maybe at times they didn't have the answer rather than say to me, I'm sorry, I wish I could help you, but I don't have the answer either. Gave me a kind of a brush off, and this is what I've tried to avoid. But my email is fairly simple. I'm more than glad to look at it and possibly bring it up here on the TechNet. It's k2key@arrl.net. And I got, in fact, a phone call today from one of the people that was able to give a little bit of a helping hand and a thank you very much from him, and also continue the good work. So that's the bottom line. I will take the positive and reject a lot of these negatives. It just seems to be, like you say, you can't, please all the people all the time, and that's the bottom line, Dick. Over.
Mel and I do get from time to time some very nice letters of people who say, gee, I found you guys with my scanner. I used to be a CB operator, or I used to be a GMRS operator, and I find you guys on the scanner. You seem to be having fun. I decided to get into ham radio. Now I am one. Thank you. We get a certain number of those. Can't please everybody. We got to accept that. If you guys think you can do it better, please go do it. run a parallel TechNet. And there have been other TechNets, and there are other TechNets. So, we'll take your suggestions as to how to do it better. Bernie, you need a fill on that? K2YO, K2RIW?
No, I just reinforce my point that I love what you guys are doing. I, for one, want you to keep it exactly the way it is. And, Mel, you know, if the emails ever do get you down, just drop me one, Bernie@HuntFamily.com, and I'll be glad to send you one every day saying, just keep at it, keep at it. Just take the positive and keep doing what you're doing. K2YO.
Yeah, Bernie's brought up a good point, Mel, and that is when people are happy, with rare exception, they talk right. Those few who are unhappy, I'd like to hope it's only 5%, are going to write. So if we only looked at our email, we could get a very slanted view as to how many people were making unhappy. However, if they're that unhappy, and there are 800 channels that they can select on 2 meters alone with their synthesized modern-day 2-meter transceiver, they don't have to tune to this one. They can tune to one of the others, and some do. So if they're hanging here and listening week after week and complaining, maybe left-handedly, that's a compliment. K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Well, you know, this one situation is subject that again predominated the end of the TechNet this evening, which we of course started last week. Getting back to the bottom line is, I guess we've discussed the auto industry, the banking industry, or et cetera. But getting back to our business, our line of work, this is where it started with people asking. They did get into ham radio, and now they sort of got this love for this electronics that we've been with for so many years. I guess I can honestly say in my case, I never had any other hobbies other than something to do with a little electrical gadgets initially, and, you know, as a youngster, and then the crystal radios and, you know, stuff like that, and then into amateur radio and into the field of electronics as a livelihood and all. And they're asking the same thing now. Would you, this is where the original question came about, would you, again, advise now if you had a son, a cousin, a neighbor's child, hey, you got your ham license, isn't this a fantastic industry to get involved in? Will they have a job if they do put in the effort? This is the bottom line. And I've gotten, this is what generated all these emails, Dick. Unfortunately, both of them say no, over.
There are no guarantees. It'd be nice if your son said, gee, I want to be an attorney, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a teacher. We'd like to believe that those occupations are always in demand. Unfortunately, teachers are not very well paid. My son told me he wants to be an engineer, and he became one. For a short period of time, he worked in the company I worked at. He worked in the adjacent department to me. I was very happy. He was very happy. He consulted with me from time to time. Brought me into the lab where he was doing some work, saying, hey, why did the spectrum analyzer do that? And I had been working in spectrum analyzers for 20 years, and I could answer the question. A number of my fellow employees said, how in the world can you tolerate a member of your family working for the same company? I never understood that concept. What's wrong with it? I didn't get an answer that I understood. But a lot of people think, but gee, I don't want anybody working at the company I'm working at. Does that mean they treat the people at the company in such a way that they don't want anyone at home knowing how they're doing that? I don't know what's going on. I didn't understand that one. The nice thing about the United States is that we have enough degree of freedom that if you have a true passion for a subject and you pursue it earnestly, there's a 90-some-odd% chance you will be able to earn a living doing that, and there's a high probability you'll be happy doing it. You got to do something you're going to enjoy. I've seen too many people say, gee, I really hate my job, but I'm locked in, I've got a family, I've got no choice, I've got to keep going to this particular job that I hate, working for this boss that I hate, doing this function that I hate. We've met a few of those. You got to try to avoid that. I know it's darn difficult. Let me drop. For a 16, 17, 18-year-old to try to figure out, what am I going to be good at? What am I good at? What am I going to be good at? What do I want to do? A high percentage of the people going into college, even in engineering school, the engineering schools will set up the first year or two being common to all forms of engineering, because an awful lot of those students think they want engineering. They're not sure which one. Industrial, chemical, electrical, mechanical, and so on. But you and I, Mel, were lucky enough through our ham radio background to know that we went into a school saying, I'm going to be going into electrical engineering and majoring in RF engineering. And the way I was exposed to RF engineering in my particular school allowed me to walk out of there saying, I don't like microwaves, I'm not going to work at that. And I got into a company called Airborne Instruments Laboratory, started working for W2CTK, Hank Keen, a ham radio operator, who was doing microwave work, building rotary joints, and boy, what a different impression I had. And it looked like an awful lot of fun. And it has been for the last 40 years. So I guess you've got to, by some magic, try to choose what you're good at, try to choose what you enjoy, try to bloom where you're planted. You're going to hear a lot of negatives no matter where you are. People are going to say, oh, you shouldn't do that, you should do this. That's what I'm doing.
Well,
You got to be your own. Gather a whole lot of opinions, but you got to swallow much but digest little, or you got to integrate the whole great big picture. By some magic, you got to find out what's going on in the whole world. What's going on in your block is not the whole world. I know when I entered school, I was extremely naive. I was the first person in my family to go to college. There's a hell of a lot of information I need as to how to survive in that environment that I didn't have. And that freshman year, I almost didn't survive. You've got time for at least one real technical letter if you want to try it, Mel. K2KEY, K2RAW.
Dick, Roger. Yeah, well, bottom line is, Eric, I'm just going to say, there's a few of these emails I was looking over here, and one of them said, I am a ham radio operator. It's my hobby. But I graduated within 16 months from architecture, and I have not been able to find a decent position right now, mostly part-time position. My brother graduated at pharmacy school, and I hope someday make 50% of what he is making right now after just 6 months out of school. I'm just reading over some of these. Some of these are heartbreaking. Yeah. Well, the bottom line, I'm just going to say, well, I think we'll go back to the technical stuff next week because time is just about running out. But you mentioned going to school. I was advised when I was graduating college, when I was graduating my last term, that, oh, you've got a real feel for this. And I said, yes, I do really love working with this, all forms of electronics, RF especially. And you should go further. And I said, oh, yes, that would be wonderful, but I am out of money. If I don't start earning some money, I don't know what I'll do. I really, this is it. I took the last money I had for my GI loan and was able to complete my education. So that's the bottom line. You're wonderful to be really loving a certain type of vocation. But the bottom line is when you go to the supermarket, they don't want to know about that. They want to know, do you have the money to buy the loaf of bread, Dick? Over.
Yeah, that's the practical side of it. An adaptive person can take a job that's beneath his station temporarily to survive. On a permanent basis, of course, it's going to hurt. Architecture, which is the letter you just read, is a difficult field. You look at that PBS documentary about Frank Lloyd Wright, arguably one of the most famous architects in the United States. He went through some very tough times. Architecture is a kind of a luxury item. When the economy is real good and somebody is building a city and they want a state-of-the-art building and they hire architects, for a short period of time you can be in Fat City. But they don't build fancy new buildings during a depression. Therefore, they don't need architects to design them during that time. So I guess it's a little bit of a canary occupation in that you get forewarning real fast when the work dries up as an architect that a depression is coming. It's a tough field. And so if my son wanted to be an architect, I wouldn't tell him don't. I would simply tell him, this is what I know about how difficult it could be. Maybe you've got a real good website and advertise your wares very well. Because it's now a global economy, and they don't need an architect in New York, but maybe they need one in Australia. So with the right kind of a website, you'll get work. Maybe that's an approach. Back to you, Mel, K2KE1, K2RAW.
You got to pick up and keep going. That's the point. You can't put down any roots. Don't go any place that you say, oh boy, I'm working here now. Maybe I'll buy a home here. No, I'm afraid it's not the vocation, because as you say right now, you're going to have to be ready to pick up and go. And that's unfortunately the bottom line. There are very few people that they say now feel that they are going to have a job with a company like their fathers and their forefathers, that would spend a life, would get in with some company, some place, and, you know, and put their working years in and then retire with some nice little pension and all. I think that's a thing of the past. And I'm sure if the restructuring of the automotive manufacturers in this country, they're not going to be so liberal as they were in the past. People are not going to have that kind of benefit from their job as they had, and the chances are they're not going to be getting their so-called lifetime jobs anymore. I think that's the bottom line. We're going to have to think a lot different. Things are going to be a lot different. I think we lived through some bad times, but I think also we did live through, Dick, you and I, some extremely good times. And I don't know if we can promise this to our young people today that they are going to be able to look forward to the same situation. As far as my personal thinking, I see this global as, yes, definitely, we can't bury our head in the ground, you know, and it'll go away. But I see it's going to take a lot out of us before it evens out over.
Jeff? There's no free lunch. There's no super easy way. You're going to have to struggle. And if you struggle the right way, with enough objectivity, talk to enough people as to how do things work, the main thing that ham radio supplies is communication. Communication with an awful lot of people that are somewhat educated, some of them very educated, some of them Nobel laureates. And that's K1JT, for instance. You can go to a lecture of his, and a number of hams have done it. I've done that, where he passed around his great big gold emblem for the Nobel Prize he got for the work he did in radio astronomy. Fascinating guy to talk to and listen to. That's a ham radio operator. So ham radio operators do communicate. And you can communicate locally and you can communicate globally. You can find out what life is like in Australia and China and Japan if you want to, and Germany and Austria and Holland, by talking to a ham radio operator. And not all the ham radio operators say, hello, goodbye, send me a card. Some of them, you do get a chance to ask them the question that I like to ask occasionally. You're talking to a guy in Yugoslavia, and you ask him, hey, whatever his name is, I'm going to call him Bert, when you walk out your front door in the morning to go to work, tell me what you see. What is life in your town like? You can find out an awful lot about what the world situation is like by talking to a ham radio operator. And if you want, you can ask him what antenna and what transmission line he's using, and is he feeding it 220 volts. If you've got the right interest, there's a lot of good information there. That combined with the internet is going to give you an awful lot of a view of what's going on. We're coming down to about 2 minutes before the end of the TechNet. This was TechNet number, where did I write down the number? 1,248 of the series that began in September of 1982. This coming September will be our 27th year. Craziness. And by the way, Mel, I came out of college with a bachelor degree.
Repeater, time out.
And started working for a company. And ultimately, I retired from that company 35 years later. I'm that rare, crazy individual that worked for one single company for 35 straight years. The good news is they had a lot of different divisions that I worked for that almost act like separate companies, but I worked for one company. I think it's a rare thing. I know one other guy that did that. Tie the ribbons on it, Mel. Bye-bye for now, you guys. Be kind to each other and try to be optimistic. It ain't that bad. You don't want to live anywhere else in the world. K2KUY, K2LAW.
I'll say amen to you. It's still the best place in the world to live, and I think the best place in this country is here in New York. I know a lot of people are going to say, are you kidding? But no, I think so. And I think things will ease up. It will take time. And yes, maybe it may take 4 or 5 years. But we're just going to have to also adapt. We're going to have to be a little bit more, you know, flexible in a number of different situations. So this is the bottom line. I feel for all those that are out of work and all. I know it's tough times and everything, but you just got to keep trying. That's it. That's how human type are. 73 is all. Do it again next week at 6. This is K2KEY. Good night.
That's it.
The time is 12 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30.
Night at the Museum.
10 Sweetie.
November 1, WTC.
Good morning, Eugene. How are you today? I haven't spoke to you in a while. Yeah, what I've been doing...